Blog Talk Radio. This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, and welcome to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, and I'm so glad to be here with you today. I have a really special guest coming on. Her name is Honey Casper, and she's going to talk about how she was able to build a fulfilling... Sorry about that. We got some technical difficulties going on here. So I'm going to start again. This is Mari Mitchell with Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I have a guest, Honey Casper, who's coming on. She's going to talk about how she was able to build a fulfilling life even after abuse and tragedy. Honey is a pen name the author used to write the book Unpredictable, The Walk in and Out of Darkness. She's an overcomer and survivor, and she has uplifting insight for overcoming with grace and faith in God. Welcome to the show, Honey. It's so good to have you here today.
Thank you, Mari. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for having me on.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what you experienced in your life that eventually led you to writing the book Unpredictable, The Walk in and Out of Darkness.
Well, as you mentioned, I am a survivor and of every type of abuse that you can imagine. And I survived an entire family breakdown, and a lot of violence was in the family. And just a survivor of those things.
Okay. And so why did you want to write the book? What was your purpose in the writing?
To inspire and let others know that even if they do survive abuses and neglect, that they can lead a prosperous and healthy life, and that there is hope after it.
Wonderful. And so you were able to do this. You were able to create a good life for yourself even after all this. What do you think enabled you to be able to do that? Because a lot of people can't do that. They cannot create a happy and fulfilling life.
I think really it was a faith in God. I mean, I think that my formative years up to the age of 8 or 9 really played a factor in it, because I lived with my grandmother during that time, and it was she was raised a Mennonite, so a very sheltered life, you know, like very innocent. I was very innocent, and then at the age of 9, I was taken from her by my biological mother. And I always felt like I was kidnapped from her, you know, because I really didn't know her very well. And literally went from being innocent and a young Christian, you know, girl to the opposite, in a very destructive home, very just awful circumstances. And I think that having those formative years, though, that showed me something different, I think that pulled me through and helped me, because I already had some kind of faith before, you know, the dark times.
Right. So how were you able to cling to that faith? How were you able to reach out to God during this time, you know, so that you could endure it and you could overcome it?
I really, like, every night I would pray, and when I prayed, it was the only time I didn't feel alone. So, you know, we were always, you know, starving. We really weren't cared for at all. And my brothers had drug addiction issues, except for one of them, who, he admitted that one time that he was an alcoholic, but I'm not sure when that started. But very, very negative. But when I prayed at night, that was the only time that I felt like I was not alone. I really felt his presence. And that, and I don't know, my oldest brother used to come in and into my room and check on me at night, and he'd say, you know, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And he knew how, you know, depressed and even the whole situation was just so shocking from what I was, you know, originally in. And we were really deserted. I mean, our biological mother, she just really wasn't there for us in any capacity. It was all about a man and running, and she did work two jobs, but we never really saw any of that. She would come home on Fridays, pack a bag, and disappear till Sunday night or Monday. So she literally was never home. We were raising ourselves, and it's like she didn't even consider the things that she wasn't giving us. It just didn't occur to her. It was more like, you know, we were in her way of what she wanted.
Mm-hmm. That didn't feel good, of course. And so tell us a little bit more about after you were able to get out of this. Did you have to wait until you were of age to get out of the situation, or were you pulled out before then?
Oh, no, I had tried it. What? For public assistance many times, talking to guidance counselors or whatever, but we would just disappear. We were really ghosts in the system. We moved at least every 6 months, if not more than that. Mm-hmm. And if she was being investigated, we would just pack up. It would be like not even a day's notice. She would call and she'd say,
right,
start packing, and the next day would be gone. So, no, I met my husband, or who would become my husband, at 17, and mm-hmm. we were married that year. And so that was the first out that I really had. And I remember the first argument we had. I went and I hid in this little attic crawl space, and my husband came up to me and he said, "Is this what you do?" And I was like,
aww,
yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, you know. And so he said, "Well, you don't have to do that anymore." And I was like, "Really?"
Aww.
Like, it was, you know,
wow,
for someone even to voice that. Yeah, so I really started to build my life from there, but it was a really hard and long road. And I remember many times where I knew if I took road or the other, like it was major choices. And I knew that each choice would alter my future, but I really felt like, even though it was hard, even one of the hardest things I ever had to do, of course, was breaking ties with my family, because
mm-hmm.
they were just so destructive. I mean, even with my brothers, I couldn't have a relationship because they were so damaged, and I would have been taken back to the abuse, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
because of how they treated me and so forth. So, yeah, it wasn't an easy road, but I know that I made the right decisions for my own sanity and to build a life and to keep my children safe. I wanted them to have everything I didn't have. I wanted them to have as normal of an upbringing that I could. And I really made sure that they were the priority. I didn't really make time even to grieve. I mean, I just started to see a counselor in the last year, and
wow,
that's been a real eye opener to actually have names for things that happened. Like, I didn't know I was an exploited child until the counselor said, you know, this is why, you know, you're like, had to explain it to me. And
mm-hmm.
My mother would do sexual acts with one of her boyfriends in front of me and so forth. And so I didn't even realize that she was a child molester. I knew he was, but I didn't know she was.
Right.
Until the counselor told me. I mean, this kind of damage runs so deep that it takes a very long time to heal. And mm-hmm. even though I was doing very well, and even though I had built a life that was a very good life, I still learned a lot by going to that counselor. It really made a difference.
That's great. But, you know, you were able to, you know what I love about your story, honey, is you just talked about your kids. You wanted something different for your children. You didn't want them to have to go through anything near what you experienced. And so you made a choice to cut that cycle of abuse. Because, as
yep.
you know, that will go on generation after generation because a person is not able to cut it, but you were able to stop it dead in its tracks. And for that, I applaud you. I think that that's a most amazing and wonderful thing. You set out to do that, and like you said, it wasn't easy, but you did accomplish that. And so you decided to write the book. We're going to talk about that in the second half as we come back. You know, after we do our sponsorship. But before we go there, tell us a little bit about authenticity, about being who you really are, and what role that plays in your life.
Well, definitely staying true to yourself and your beliefs and while respecting others. Now, that's also a very difficult thing because somebody that's abused, they don't understand who they are normally. I mean, I'm still, after, you know, being married over 30 years, I'm still learning mm-hmm. about likes and dislikes and things like that. I mean, I didn't know till probably about 6 years ago that I enjoy painting, you know, or there was a lot of things that I didn't get to finish as a kid because we moved so often. I mean, from the time I was third grade, I moved 25 times by the time I turned 17, and I went to 15 different schools. So,
wow.
You talk about living a fragmented life. I certainly did that. And so, but those are important things, but you have to figure out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to allow yourself that time to grieve and to figure out your likes and dislikes, because it doesn't come naturally to someone that's that damaged in their childhood.
Exactly. And I'm sure you had to also differentiate between who they told you you were and who you really are. You know, that had to be part of the process.
Yeah, very much so. It's interesting because I'm comfortable in my own skin, which is pretty incredible mm-hmm. to even say, but I'm proud of who I am now, but I don't really let my past influence my present at all, but sometimes it is painful. I mean, when I started seeing the counselor, she mm-hmm. asked me to keep a journal and start writing, you know, facts about each person that was in my life, but I couldn't do that. And then I figured out I could write poetry and I could share mm-hmm. the poetry and that. And then also I put together a song list that told my story, and those were the ways I could communicate and that were the mm-hmm. most powerful. So those two things helped me to communicate my life.
That's great. And I'm so thankful that you found a way to communicate, that you didn't just stick to the first suggestion, which didn't work for you. So that was great. You're an exceptional person. And I can't wait to come back and talk about your book, because that's a message of hope for people, for the listener. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Some of us are not so lucky. Some very lucky. I researched and wrote the book, The Careless Driver, so that we as a nation could become lucky motorists. Motorists that don't hit animals, pedestrians, or other vehicles, ever. If there were no collisions, there would be no fatalities, no deaths on our highways and roadways. Please listen. You are invited.
Hi. Hello, it's Doc Indy here, your conscious life coach for women. As women, we're always taking care of everyone else, oftentimes to our own neglect, but I'm here to help you change that. I want you to go to mindfulhealthforwomen.com, that's with the number 4, so that you can book your free 30-minute coaching session, and we'll begin to address your mental, physical, and spiritual health. I look forward to speaking with you.
I'm Sue Matthews, the author of Paint Your Hair Blue, a celebration of life with hope for tomorrow in the face of pediatric cancer. PaintYourHairBlue.com. My book is about my daughter Taylor's journey through cancer. Your heart will break and soar, sometimes simultaneously, as you learn about Taylor's fierce courage and unremitting resolve to not permit cancer to scar her spirit or body. You'll come away from the book with a vivid understanding of how truly short and precious life is, and a greater willingness to add more color as we go along.
Welcome back to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Maureen Mitchell, and we have special guest, Honey Casper. She talks about how she was able to build a fulfilling life even after abuse and tragedy. And Honey is a pen name the author used to write the book, Unpredictable, The Walk in and Out of Darkness. So before we talk about your book, Honey, I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the first thing a person must do to begin their path to overcoming any abuse or tragedy they've experienced in their life?
I think that to kind of look around them at their surroundings and find the good things that are there, or good people. That was always very important to me. And it's something I recognized even as a child, that every time there was something really evil in my life, there was also something very positive. And I always kind of migrated to the good things. And then also, you know, to cut ties to the damaging and dangerous relationships. It's very difficult to have connections to negative relationships and heal at the same time. And then for me, I started to study the Bible, which has helped me more than anything. And then again, the counselor to talk. You know, when you have a counselor for someone that survived a lot, you actually, it's the first time that your voice is really heard and understood and helps you to analyze things that happen. I mean, I think it's very important. I chose a Christian counselor, but, you know, that was my choice.
Right.
And it's empowering. It's empowering to gain knowledge on the abuse and the naming of the different types of abuse. And many times those that are abused just don't know or understand all the names of what they survived and how important that really is.
Mm-hmm. What does knowing the names and having that information do for you? How did it affect you in a good way?
Well, it's just empowering. It's even for the book, because I had worked on this book for over 20 years. And I didn't know, you know, I had PTSD, so I would try to gather the information as the memories would come back. But after I started seeing the counselor, I really felt empowered to even get it out there. And I was I felt like, should I really release it? Because I knew it was fragmented because of the PTSD. But then my counselor said, you know, say that in the beginning. Say that, you know, you suffer from PTSD and people will understand. And that's true. And I've had really positive feedback from individuals that have read it. And I'm so thankful. One person said that they actually are inspired to write their own story now, and that it really did help them. So I was like, oh, wow, that's exactly what I wanted. I really didn't feel like I wrote it for me or for my healing. I really didn't. But I felt like there's so many people in our lives that even try to hurt themselves for things that they survived. But I wanted them to see that they could build something positive. They could survive, do more than survive. They could grow.
So is that the main message you want to bring to the public, or is there another message?
I mean, just that they can survive their past and be successful. And also, I think, for me, you know, volunteering in my community and helping the less fortunate can be helpful in healing. I mean, I very seldom ever concentrate on me or felt like poor me, baby. I was certainly a victim as a young girl, but I don't feel like a victim anymore because of the life that I've built.
That's great. One of the things that struck me as you were talking before, when I asked you what's the first thing a person needs to do, is even as a child, you decided to focus on the good things in your life. And that was a very wise thing to do. And it actually is a tactic that works, because whatever you focus on more, you bring more into your life. So I thought that was brilliant. That must have been like the guidance of God to say, hey, focus on the good, you know. And I think that's one of the reasons you were able to, like you say, you don't see yourself as a victim. And that's very rare for a person to have gone through what you've gone through and not see themselves or feel like a victim. So, again, you're just such a beautiful role model, you know, to people who've gone through things like this. So let's talk a little bit more about your book. Share some of the favorite parts with us, maybe.
Well, there's so many. Do you want me to read a little bit, or do you want me just to talk about
whatever
it overall?
You're comfortable with. Whichever you're comfortable with, honey, is fine. Yeah.
I think that I was mentioning the poetry and the songs. I listed my song list in the back of the book, and I think that it literally takes people through the emotions of the things that I've survived, and then I've shared a little bit of poetry in the book. But I do have a little bit of the book that I could share. It was about the moving that we did.
Okay, sure.
And it's in chapter 8. It says, let's see, we were constantly moving around every 6 months on average. I went from one school to the next. My mother would call and say, start packing, and that's what I would do. I was very efficient at a young age. I could arrange everything and keep my cool. Every friend I ever had would literally seem to vanish. I have all these faces in my memory, and I can't remember their names. The ones I have connected with never imagined what I was living through, because when I was with them, I lived in the moment. I was funny, silly, happy, and a sweet girl that just wanted to enjoy. Sorry, I have to go down a little. Being a kid before the next move. This became normal. Make a friend and never say goodbye and never talk to them again.
Wow. That's very touching and very powerful. And again, what strikes me is your determination to live in the moment, you know, being silly and happy and having fun rather than focusing on the terrible circumstances you were actually experiencing. It takes a lot of courage to do that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on Dare to Be Authentic, because it takes a lot of guts and courage to do what you did. Anything else you wanted to share from the book or about the book in general?
Well, not that I can think of. I mean, I could share a little of the poetry if you want.
Yes, that would be beautiful. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, just a second. Let me get down to where that is. Okay. Well, I have, like I said, multiple in there. I have one that's called Once Upon a Time that I wrote. It's Once Upon a Time There Was a Child, so innocent and pure. Her heart was as true as the purest gold and as rich as the finest jewels. She trusted and loved others and God. The world around her started in darkness. Then there was light that flickered in the darkness. Then the darkness came again. She survived atrocities and betrayal by the person that gave her life. She learned that even this person couldn't be trusted. Through her faith, she stayed strong, one troop to hold dear. He rescued her from great despair. Not overnight, but in his time. Every prayer from this girl rewarded with a loving family of her own. Of her, she soon would overcome, even though darkness would make itself known, she would stay strong. Can't and won't were redefined to can and will.
Beautiful. Wow. It's very powerful. I love that it ends with something positive. I know how difficult it is for you to read it. I can feel it. I love that you say it will be changed to can and will, because that was your determination. Would you share with us your song list, your playlist? I'm curious to hear that.
Sure. And in fact, on my Facebook page, every week I release one of those songs, and I call it the Song of the Week, just so people can kind of enjoy it. But songs that represent my life, I started again with the one that's most powerful to me and that is an overcoming song, and it's for my grandma, and it's called There You'll Be, and it's sung by Faith Hill. So I start with that one, and then Dear Mom, which was originally a song by Amanda Janine, and then The Little Girl, sung by John Michael Montgomery. Concrete Angel by Martina McBride. Because of You by Kelly Clarkson. And Piece by Piece by Kelly Clarkson. Who You Are by Jessie J. The Broken Girl, sung by Matthew West. And Broken by Lindsey Hahn. And Tell Your Heart to Beat Again by Danny Gokey. Inner Demons by Julia Brennan. The Fight Song by Rachel Platten. You're Beautiful, sung by James Blunt. Answer by Sarah McLachlan. And Make It Rain by Ed Sheeran. Warrior by Demi Lovato. And This Is My Now by Jordan Sparks. And then finally, Perfect, sung by Ed Sheeran. But actually, when I had come across these, and it took a while, I mean, to put this together. I played them all in order, and I actually remember I would say, okay, it's okay to cry and to feel each of these, what they mean to me. So that's all part of a healing, you know, like playing them in the order that I feel that they should be in. And, yeah, literally tells my story.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of anybody do that, and that was just absolutely beautiful to hear that. So we're just winding down to the end of the show. Was there one last thing you wanted to say to a listener, honey?
Well, they can. I have a website. It's unpredictablethewalk.weebly.com, and you can find my book on Amazon or online bookstores. And then, you know, they can follow me on Facebook. I do update it every week with either interviews or my song list. And I do want to hear from people if my book helps. I mean, I think even hearing from people will be rewarding for me, because I wrote it for the people. I really didn't feel like I wrote it for me. But it's just important that I know that it's really helping other people, that it's making an impact.
Great. And you can find Honey on my website as well, on my radio show page, lifecoachmari.com, lifecoachmari.com. Just click on radio page and the book is there and the link to the book. Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been wonderful having you, honey.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening, and join us next time on Dare to Be Authentic Radio.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.